Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam on Live with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, can Muslims ever influence British politics?
The British Parliament is well underway in a new year of British politics. But can British Muslims engage in the politics of a non-Muslim country, namely Britain? How can Muslims influence a non-religious government? Is the current system of politics in Britain unapproachable for Muslims? What kind of results and reforms are British Muslims looking for? And in what ways can Muslims engage in mainstream discussion without their views being dismissed? This week's Islam in Life asks, can Muslims ever influence British politics?
It is indeed a critical question for Muslims living in Britain and living within a non-Muslim majority country. For years we heard that even for Muslims it's not possible to stay in Britain, and then to understand in which way they have to look at the British political scene, what could be their role and in which way they can influence. And what we also have to ask ourselves, in which way they can positively influence, what is their role within politics, not only in the social issues and in cultural issues and religious issues, but here we are talking about politics and in which way they can influence, yes or no, the British politics in one way or in another. And to answer all these questions, I am joined by my guest, social and political commentator, Muhammad Ansar. Thank you so much for being with us. It's Ansari, isn't it?
Ansar.
Ansar. Okay, sorry for that. But tell me something about this. I want to start with this understanding of the British, what we call British politics or the British political scene. How, in your sense, Muslims should look at it as Muslims, as citizens, and in which way they have to consider this political scene in this country?
I think the first and most important thing is British Muslims need to look at the political template, need to look at the political framework as something that they are part of. They are not distinct from it, they are not separate from it. And once they realise, and once we realise that this is part of the fabric of our society, firstly, it becomes a lot closer. It becomes a lot closer, and the reality of engaging in dialogue in British politics, in the public discourse, becomes something which can is a dream which can be realised. Too many Muslims, I think, see it as something distinct. They see it as something discreet. They see it as something they're unable to engage with, something foreign. And the first thing they have to do is accept that this is part of their culture. This is part of their society.
But there is a very important point here, because many people in British politics and you know, what we call the indigenous British citizens, they look at Muslims as if they were still foreigners or foreign citizens even. And what you are pointing out now is it might be that Muslims themselves should change their mindset, their perception of the reality, and not accepting that this is, or not even considering that something which is alien to them, but as you put it, our society. So how do you change this? Shall we do something about it?
There is a sense of otherness which we need as British Muslim and European Muslims to engage with. This idea of this Edward Said other, a US theologian, Brian McLaren, has spoken recently about this. And often we say, by understanding what we see to be the other, what we see to be the protagonists, the antagonists, we then define our own reality and our sense of self. And Muslims need to understand that community, in the best definition, in the most wholesome definition, includes Muslims and non-Muslims in society. And so I think the first thing is to go back to a more authentic, scriptural definition of what we consider to be ummah, in the prophetic tradition of being everybody. And we start from a theological basis, as people who want to reach out to some orthodoxy, yet some kind of modernity, some kind of progressiveness. Once we have a better definition, then we can start to reframe the dialogue.
So let me put it that way, because, you know, I experienced this myself by saying something which was very close to what you are saying, is that this is our society, this is our ummah. Even the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, my people, even with people having rejected him. And you have people saying, look, how can you say something like this? You, if you consider yourself as a British Muslim, and you have to be involved in British politics, when the politicians in this country are sending armies, killing people in Iraq, people in the Middle East, people not doing anything about Muslims who are killed, is as if the Muslims have, are second class citizens, even here. So if this was true with the Ummah, if this was the reality of, you know, this is my country, that's impossible to have politicians deciding to go and kill Muslims. And this is a critical question, because it's not only the perception, is the very understanding of what it means to belong to a society. Mm-hmm. What would be your answer?
There are two ways of addressing this, and especially I think if I was talking to a younger crowd. The first example is a very simplistic model, which is to say, if you feel you are being hit with a stick, you've got two choices. Allow yourself to be hit with a stick, or grab the stick. Hmm. Grab the stick and do something with it. Hmm. My advice is don't hit back, but my advice is think. Think, what are the best ways to engage, what are the best ways to influence? I think hopefully a more enlightened discussion will be something around what and how we want to structure society. Muslims are a fundamental part of society in the West. We have been here for 1,000 years engaging and contributing to modern European society, civilization. I was talking recently about how Muslims contributed to the tapestry behind the Reformation. Hmm. And these are things that Christian Europeans hold to be something quite distinct from Muslim influence. Once we appreciate we're part of this society, then we can start saying, well, actually, we have a fundamental responsibility. Islam is based on social justice, and it's transformative. And if Muslims are able to look at their deen, at their way of life as being something which is designed and established to produce corrections in society, if it's something that is able to be transformative and influence not just Muslim lives but non-Muslim lives in a positive way, and then I think we really have some hope.
Okay, I understand that, which could be disappointing for someone who is asking our involvement within the British society as Muslims and British citizens. Now, if we come to the question, we are asking ourselves about how can Muslims contribute to British politics. Before this, if you have to assess, you were talking about, you know, our presence, 1,000 or more, you know, it's a very long presence. Now there is a new presence after the Second World War, the Muslims, and even in between, but mainly after the Second World War, we have a new Muslim presence in the West, in Britain, in France, in Germany, everywhere. And now we have millions of Muslims who are British citizens or European citizens, and hundreds of thousands who are British citizens. If you have to assess their contribution in political terms, would you say it's positive, it's visible, or it's not enough?
I think it's a mixture of all of them, if that's not a cop-out. If we look at the British context, for example, we had very little Muslim involvement in public life, in political affairs, up until the last two elections. At the last election, we had something like 8 Muslim MPs elected, 3 women, 5 men. And that is largely disproportionate for a political class of 650 MPs. If it was proportionate, we'd be expecting to see 20 to 30 Muslim MPs there. And then there's a question about what does this political class look like? Largely Oxbridge educated, largely increasingly elite, largely increasingly wealthy. Now, we have a current system where university degrees in this country are going to be costing upwards of £50,000 to achieve. We have a British Muslim population which is anywhere between 75 and 80% on or below the poverty line. We have welfare reforms, cuts, which are going to be setting people adrift on a raft, essentially, and people are being asked to fend for themselves. In this context, in this climate, it is arguable to suggest whether there is a civil rights crisis for Muslims in this country. And if education is going to be something harder to achieve, if political engagement through professional engagement is going to be harder to achieve, then the Muslims we see engaged at the minute may well be a diminishing class.
That's a very important point, because you are not putting it as, you know, only something which has to do with your commitment or your involvement with the Muslim community, something which has to do with classes, it has to do with, you know, your wealth and who you are representing. Many people and many Muslims I talked to in the last 10 years, for example, what they're saying, the people who have been elected are not representing us. And not only because of their social class or, you know, where they sit in the hall, you know, being rich or poor, but also by the way they are involved in politics. It's as if to be involved in politics or to be elected, you have to accept the mainstream political positions. And in ethical terms, in cultural terms, in moral terms, it's just accepted. And in fact, to be part of the system, you have to disintegrate from your Islamic principles. What would you respond to this?
I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think the claim that Muslim values and behaviours are something that should be so intrinsic to Islamic life that when you engage in a political discourse, when you're involved in social activism, when you're involved in charities and the private sector or the public sector, these values are something you should carry with you. It's that which transforms your behaviours. It's that which transforms your ideals and your decision making. And if the allegation is that Muslims, when they get involved in the political system, Gandhi described it as something around social activism. He said it's a snake we must wrestle with. And if I'm often asked, as I am, are you thinking of going into politics? I say, I think it's too dirty for me. And so I approach it only because I have to and only at a distance. And I try to do it in the best way possible. However, if you want to make a change, you are going to have to be involved in politics. And if the accusation is Muslims are losing their values and their behaviours, I think when we look at debates around Syria, I think when we look at debates around Iraq and Afghanistan, I think those claims could well be held to account.
But the point for me, it's if I listen to you, you are saying at the same time we are losing our values, and at the same time you say, well, but we should be involved. So who should be involved if he or she is going to lose his or her values?
In a modern society, in potentially which somebody described to me as being a post-liberal society, it's going to be absolutely vital that Muslims cling on to their identity and have an authentic Islamic reference in the work that they do. The democratization of power, the democratization of authority, requires the masses to consider how they're going to plug the moral vacuum. This requires the masses to have a very clear steer and a very clear identity. Often we talk of political decisions, we talk of politicians making decisions, but the electorate, many of them, and especially the Muslims, we cling to our faith, we cling to our ideals. We can be the wind that blows, we can be game changers if we're able to focus our energies and able to focus our talents in a positive direction. We don't need to be swayed by the political machine, we can sway the political machine.
So that's exactly the point. We come as Muslims with a very clear set of ethical values and principles and even objectives. Is to be a muslihun, meaning reforming the society for the better. We reform ourselves and reform the society. Now we are, and people here are British citizens. What you are saying is, be careful with politics, is a dirty game. Still, we have to be involved. Now, how? How can the Muslims and the British Muslims influence British politics?
I think the first thing is language. Too few Muslims involved in public life are speaking the language that the broader population understands. It's absolutely fine if you're talking to your own constituency, if you're talking to your own electorate, or you're talking to your own congregations. But actually, if you want to be involved in public affairs, you need to be speaking a language that Muslims and non-Muslims understand. That doesn't mean compromising your values and your ideals. It means really understanding what it means to engage and having a good narrative. So firstly, communications and language. Secondly, you need to be compelling. There is absolutely no point fueling self-interest, fueling tribalism, thinking that the answer to this is playing the dirty game. What we've seen across Europe, especially in Britain, is the increase in the far right. Far right influence, whether it's UKIP, the tail that wags the Tory dog, or whether it's the English Defence League or other organisations across Europe. And so there is a vacuum that needs to be filled, which is around socialism, social activism, and largely the left. And Muslims have very, very strong affiliations with the left, with socialism, with social activism. We may be right when it comes to crime and punishment and other issues, but certainly when it comes to civic society, we have a narrative, we have a compelling story, and I think people want to hear that.
That's important. Let me come to your first point when you are saying communication is important and to come to with a strong narrative. While very often the narrative which is put for the country is putting Muslims outside the narrative. And the narrative is power, you know, Foucault was saying this. The narrative, the one who said the narrative has power. And the power, as you said it, in social terms, in cultural terms, is not on the side of the British Muslim citizens. How do you come with a strong narrative to be able to influence, to say, okay, look, this is my society, I'm involved in politics?
You need to know what you think first. And too often, we go out and we're involved in community affairs, we're involved in social activism, and people don't necessarily think all the way through. They have some answers to some questions. And if we behave in a way in which we're isolationist, if we're not reaching out to non-Muslim communities, if we're not reaching out to people of other faith and of no faith, how do we begin to bridge the gap? How do we begin to bridge the gap in society? I think to some degree, we could almost make the argument that through the Western Enlightenment, through the time of the Industrial Revolution, before the time of the Reconquista, historically Muslims gave their voice to the West. And actually, very largely now, we need to reclaim that voice. We need to reclaim that light, those ideas of tolerance, virtues of peace and unity, and building bridges and bridging the gap between different parts of society. Once we were able to say that we are truly representative, and other members in society say, we trust Muslims. We trust Muslims because they are here to uphold our virtues and our ways of life with tolerance and understanding, I think they will support us. And that's the start of the narrative.
Yes, which could be to come back to the universal dimension of the Islamic message, to be able to reach out. But it's not as easy as that. The second part of your answer was about being involved within the society and being involved, you know, trying to create alliances, social alliances, cultural, to reach out. And this has been done. Yet now we have people saying, look, you have been doing this for years. Decades trying to work with people from, you know, all the parties. Now you enter within the party, you are losing your values. So what is the point? It might be that if you have to assess between protecting your values and to be politically influential, but at the same time losing your value, you better go for isolation, because isolation is a kind of a isolated power and ethical protection. What would be your Islamic answer to this?
I think firstly I'll reject that dichotomy. I think I would reject that argument. I think the idea that we have to choose between engagement, which brings with it power, and isolation, I think is the wrong argument. I think for too long, not just Muslims, we can talk about this with the Jewish communities and the Christian communities, to suggest that you can be strong in your ideals and strong in your faith, and yet intolerant of the system, the political framework, the broader narrative, or at the other extent, you can be weak in your faith and your values and yet be completely inclusive. I think there is middle ground. I think there is an argument for something which we in Islam have had for a long, long time, which is strong yet benevolent, which is that we can be strong in our identity, strong in our faith, and yet be benevolent to society, a benefit to society, and be transformative. And I think we have to realize that there is an enlightened third way. It's not strong and intolerant, it's not weak and inclusive, it's strong and benevolent.
Does it mean, for example, that we have to think about creating, in between, something that could be called a Muslim lobby within the British political system?
I think Muslim lobbies exist. I think they've existed for the longest time. I myself spend a lot of time talking, meeting, having cups of coffee with politicians of various stripes. This is part of life, surely. If you want to get things done, you have to go and have conversations. We have, I think, to some degree, lost the art of relationship building. You know, when it comes to things like adab and akhlaq, we have always been masters of looking after our guests. And I think once we're able to take a bit more ownership of our lives in modern society, we will begin to feel more comfortable. And I think we see this with the younger generations. The younger generations are feeling British. They don't see the dichotomy, they don't see the distinctions. They are growing up understanding that we live in a pluralistic society of different ways of life, different religions, different sexualities, different ways of living and existing.
That's true, but they are sharing with their fellow young citizens the same mistrust towards politics, which is also not to be involved. So very quickly, if you have to give a young British Muslims some advices to be involved in politics and to influence the British politics quite quickly, can you give me some advices for
Absolutely.
Them?
Absolutely. I'll say, firstly, find out who your local MP is. Secondly, shadow them, build a relationship, go on work experience, go to Parliament, see how it works. Thirdly, don't compromise your values, but think, how can I transform the lives of others? How can I transform policy with the best parts of my values?
Thank you so much. I think it was quite clear. Let us come to the beginning and try to summarize what we started with, because I think that this is very important. Coming back to the Islamic reference and the Islamic message is, wherever you are, you have to have a positive and influential presence in ethical terms, but also in social terms, and to be open. So what you are saying is that if we want to be influential, the point is that Muslims have been influential, sometimes losing their own values, and this is why you were saying something and repeating something which is very important. Be strong and know your values, know your reference. And then when it comes to the society, the narrative and communication, this is what you put as something which is important. The second part was mainly about reaching out, creating connections with the people, alliances, and to be involved within the society. And your advice to the young Muslims, and the people you are quite optimistic about this, is know your values, be able to know where you stand within the society, and try to transform the society for the better. You are not only transforming yourself, but you have to transform the society, Muslims and people of other faiths alike, and I think that this is very important. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here's the way to contact us.
We at Islam and Life would like to hear your views about the subjects that we discuss. We would also love to hear your suggestions for our program. So get in touch with us. You can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage in debate, and find out how to watch our previous shows. Follow us on Twitter at Islam and Life TV, or join us on Facebook by liking our page, Islam and Life on Press TV.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Muhammad Ansar. Thank you so much for your input and your presence. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.